on, and I haven't been recording, have I? All right, there we go. All right, so chapter 11 is, many people think that chapter 11 is the continuation or the actual content of the prophecy from this angel that came in chapter 10. The problem is that in chapter 10, verse 1, it says, in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, and in chapter 11, it says, in the first year of Darius the Mede. So this is going to be 2 years before the introduction in chapter 10. So that's a problem, but people kind of work around that in order to fit this into the context, or, you know, to make it the prophecy of chapter 10. I'm not exactly sure this is a problem to overcome, but we're going to just kind of move through this. There is no other introduction except for this, and it might be parenthetical, just kind of referring back maybe to an angel's initial visit, another angel or another vision or something to that effect. So it seems as if chapter 11 follows chapter 10, but just so you know that there is an issue there with respect to the dating and whether or not this is connected from chapter 11 to chapter 10. Now, if you're going to pick up a commentary and read about chapter 11, you are going to read a lot of history. It is going to be like a history text of the time between the testaments. So this would, we're talking about 300 BC to 100 BC and that period of time in history. The book of Malachi probably is dated 400 BC, and then Jesus, of course, is going to be 400 years later, so right there in the middle. A lot of the book of Maccabees, 1 Maccabees and 2 Maccabees, which is not a part of our Bible, which is not a part of the Bible, will have a lot of this history that is linked to chapter 11. You will read a lot of history between about the Seleucids and the Ptolemies and Egypt and, you know, Syria and all of that area of land. And if you read chapter 11, it's really difficult because you have the king of the north and the king of the south and his branch and that wife. And, you know, they're all kind of, it reads like a fantasy novel, right? You know, this is the stuff that fantasy novels are made of, chapter 11. But trying to make heads or tails of it can be a little challenging. Also, even while you read this chapter and people put it into the context of the intertestamental period, we have to go back to verse 14, which says that this is a prophecy of the end times, basically. This is a prophecy of the end times. So if you're going to take all of chapter 11 and say that it is historical, then where is the link or the connection to the end times? So I think some of it is historical, and this would be typical of Daniel, where the vision is given a little bit of history, you know, in Daniel's time, which is used to spring forward to the end times and talk about the end times. So that's not uncommon. So it would not be uncommon for us, or a surprise to us, I should say, if we read, let's go back to verses 3 and 4, for example. In verses 3 and 4, we have, then a mighty king shall arise, this is of Greece, who shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. And when he has arisen, his kingdom shall be broken up and divided toward the four winds of heaven, but not among his posterity, nor according to his dominion with which he ruled. For his kingdom shall be uprooted even for others besides these. Now, if we take that and we put it in a historical context, we're talking about that great ruler of the Greek Empire who was, anybody know? Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great came to power. He was really young. And then 3 years later, he met an early demise. Apparently, he got into some kind of drunken stupor and died. Either at somebody's hand or I don't remember the exact history. But he had no successor to take over or to go on after him. And so his kingdom, his authority there was divided between four of his generals. And that's what verses 4 and 5, 3 and 4 talk about, I think. And so there's a historical context there. And when we talk about the king of the north and the king of the south, as you go through chapter 11, this back and forth between the king of the north and the king of the south, we're probably talking about two of those generals fighting in order to gain control and gain more power. But at some point, there is a switch going forward to the end times. And that's what we want to look forward that's what we want to look for, because we're not so much interested in the history as I'm not. I mean, we could spend a whole lot of time, but I have to pick and choose in a half an hour lesson, which I've already used up 10 minutes of, you know, in an introduction. Just makes it really hard to, you know, to get through this. But we're going to try to pick it up where I think it springs forward to the end times. Now, let me make a side note here, and this is what makes the book of Daniel very powerful. All of this history of the flow of the nations from Babylon to the Medes and the Persians to the Greeks and then to the Romans and then to the end times, all of that for Daniel is future. So he is prophesying the coming of these nations. When Nebuchadnezzar was king and Daniel was taken captive to Babylon, nobody knew if it was going to be the Medes and the Persians that came on the scene and conquered Babylon. There was no indication of who was going to be the superpower, the next superpower, if even there was going to be a superpower to overthrow Babylon, who was so great. And yet Daniel prophesies about the Medes and the Persians, which that part of it is fulfilled during his days, because he continues to prophesy during the early years of the Medes and the Persians. So for Daniel, he is making a prophecy of the course of the nations. It is all in front of him. For us, a lot of it is behind us, except for the coming of Christ, who is the final king who sets up and establishes his throne. All right, so that's kind of the history. Now, I do want to point us to this verse 31, which is the abomination of desolations. Now, there is an abomination of desolation, which the book of Maccabees talks about, which history talks about, which takes place in the intertestamental period. Antiochus Epiphanes, and he goes in and he conquers the temple, and he goes and sacrifices a pig on the altar, which is a huge desecration and abomination. And that's all well and good. However, when we come to Jesus in Matthew 24:15, Jesus, on the other side of that history, still goes back to Daniel and says, this is coming in the future. So even though this Antiochus Epiphanes thing took place in the intertestamental period, Jesus, when he refers to the abomination of desolation, is still looking at Daniel's prophecy as being something in the future, not as something that had happened a couple of hundred years before him. So in Matthew 24:15, he says, Jesus, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. And then he goes on and he gives instructions. So Jesus is seeing this prophecy, or at least part of it, in Daniel as being a yet future event to come. And I think that is in line with the context of Daniel. We're looking at things that will take place in the end times. Okay? So just kind of keep that in mind. If you ever read a quick commentary on the book of Daniel, if there is such a thing, on Daniel chapter 11, just kind of keep that in mind. They're going to talk a lot about history, but it's not all history. We're still looking for the fulfillment at the return of Christ, or, you know, towards the end of times. All right, any questions about that? Any questions? So I just gave you a context and history there. Any questions? Because I kind of just blew through the whole history. Okay, if you think of something, just raise your hand and let me know. Now I want us to turn our attention to the end times, and I think that we can look at this from beginning of verse 22. So again, you know, just forgive me for my lack of understanding and knowledge of all of this stuff, but I'll try to point out some of the things that are going on in here. And let me just say before I start, there is a strong parallel between starting here, like around verse 20, and Matthew chapter 24. It's almost as if Jesus is kind of reflecting back on this whole passage of Daniel, and then he goes into his own discourse of the future that ties closely to Daniel chapter 11. So there's a lot of parallels there, and just That's something else. It would be a real fascinating study to kind of flesh that out a little bit more. Read Daniel 11, compare it to Matthew chapter 24, and just kind of work out some of the details of what Jesus is saying is yet to happen in the end times. Okay? So, we start in verse 22, and here I think we have a reference to, at some point, the king of the north, or one of his branches there, becomes the Antichrist. Okay? So in verse 22, it says, "With the force of a flood, they shall be swept away from before him and be broken, and also the prince of the covenant." So he's talking about these people who will be swept away, and who will be swept away with them? The prince of the covenant. And I think that this could be a reference to Christ and his death when he came the first time. So this king of the north, he'll come in, he'll sweep away all these people, and with him, the prince of the covenant will be swept away. And so this could be a reference to Jesus' death. Now, following the death of Jesus, of course, Jesus rose again from the dead and thwarted the plans or the plots of the devil. And so the devil went forward and began to persecute. And so we see further attempts at destruction by this king of the north. In verse 27, this is Daniel 11:27, says, "Both these kings' hearts," that's the north and the south, "they shall be bent on evil, and they shall speak lies at the same table, but it shall not prosper. For the end will still be at the appointed time." So what's happening is you have, after the death of Jesus, you have the devil and I always use the word minions. I don't know what else to use. You know, those who are following the devil, they seek to make trouble. And I think this is the period that we're in. You know, following the death and resurrection of Jesus, you have the church established. And so the devil goes out and he continues to seek to destroy the work of God and the church. And so that's us. So he continues to attack, but his attacks do not succeed. They fail. Why? Because it is not yet the appointed time. It is not yet the appointed time. So the devil can attack the church and try to snuff the church out right now, here and now. And, you know, there's many times in which he seems to be successful, and certain, you know, parts of the church are disrupted, and there's persecution and martyrdom, and there's been that throughout the history of the church. But there was a saying in the early church: the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. And so it seemed like the devil, the more that he was killing the church, the Christians, the more they spread, and the quicker they grew. And so he has attempted to snuff out the church, but every attempt has continued the expansion of the church. And here we are as part of the church in this day, all these years later, by the grace of God. So he attempts to attack and to kill, but it does not work because it is not yet the appointed time. In verse 28, it says, "While returning to his land with great riches, his heart shall be moved against the holy covenant. So he shall do damage and return to his own land." So again, he's going against the holy covenant, which is the covenant of God, and he seeks to attack and to destroy. So that's the end times. That's the Antichrist and Jesus. And then after that, we have, well, now we come to the appointed time. So in those verses 27 or so, right around there, we're kind of talking about us here, I think. And then when we come to verse 28, we skip forward to the next part. The appointed time, the end times. Well, this is starting in verse 29. So in verse 29, we have the Antichrist doing several things. And first, I think we have what I just described about the attacking against the church. "So at the appointed time, he shall return and go forward toward the south, but it shall not be like the former or the latter, for ships from Cyprus shall come against him. Therefore, he shall be grieved and return in rage against the holy covenant." So there it is again. He's in verse 29, he is seeking, and verse 30, he is seeking to destroy the holy covenant and do damage. "So he shall return and show regard for those who forsake the holy covenant. So those who forsake the holy covenant, which would not be the godly people, he shows them regard. He's kind towards them. And forces shall be mustered by him, and they shall defile the sanctuary fortress. Then they shall take away the daily sacrifices and place there the abomination of desolation. All right, so here is the kind of the linchpin verse 31, where he stops the sacrifices and he establishes the abomination of desolation. We've already seen that in the book of Daniel, and here it comes up once again. The Antichrist attacks the church. He establishes this abomination of desolation, which I believe is him going into the seat of the holy place, the mercy seat, and kind of sitting down there and declaring that he is God. Let me read Revelation chapter 12, verse 17. Revelation 12, 17, it says, "The dragon was enraged with the woman." Now, the dragon is the devil and those who are following him, with the woman, and that's Israel and the church. "The dragon was enraged with the woman and went to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God." And there, the commandments of God, it's like that we're talking about the holy covenant there. "And have the testimony of Jesus Christ." So the devil is enraged and he goes out to attack the church. That's Revelation 12, 17. Matthew 24, 15, again, Jesus says, "When you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, flee." And then we come to verse 35. And in verse 35 it says, "And some of those of understanding shall fall to refine them, purify them, and make them white until the time of the end, because it is still for the appointed time." And I think there is a reference to martyrs of the church, verse 35, until the time of the end. And then you have the Antichrist exalting himself as God, verses 36 and 37. So it says, "Then the king shall do according to his own will. He shall exalt and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the wrath has been accomplished." Now there's a reference, I think, to the wrath of the found in the book of Revelation. So he's gonna do these blasphemies until the wrath is accomplished, for what has been determined shall be done. "He shall regard neither the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any god, for he shall exalt himself again above them all." So this is the Antichrist. He exalts himself. He sets himself up as God, and he will do that until the wrath is accomplished. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 4, it says this of the Antichrist: "He opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God." So this is the Antichrist claiming to be God. Revelation 13, verse 5. This is Revelation 13 is the chapter in the book of Revelation that speaks of the Antichrist. It says, "He was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and he was given authority to continue for 42 months. And then in verse 45, it talks for all of the trouble that the Antichrist will cause. Verse 45, I love this because it just kind of puts it pretty bluntly here. It says, "And he shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas and glorious holy mountain, yet shall come to his end, and no one will help him." I love that. "He shall come to his end, and no one will help him." So that's the destruction of the Antichrist. All right, any questions about that rocket tour of the end times in Daniel chapter 11? All right, so here are our points. You have the appointed time and the end times. The Antichrist attacks the church. You have the abomination of desolation, and then you have the exaltation of the Antichrist as God. All right. Any thoughts, comments, questions? Okay. What can we take away from this? Now, here I'm going back to Matthew chapter 24, so I would like for us to turn to Matthew 24. As I said a little bit earlier, I think there are a lot of parallels between Matthew 24 and Daniel chapter 11. And that would be a good exercise of a deep Bible study for someone if you find yourself so motivated to do that kind of a thing. But anyway, I thought I would go to Matthew chapter 24 and see some of the exhortations that Jesus leaves us with concerning all of these events that are going to transpire in the end times. And I think Jesus, as he's going through this, he's not just talking about those who live at the end times. He's talking about those who are going to follow him, the church. That's us. So I think we can take these and directly have an application to our lives. All right? So I'm going to point out some verses here. Our first point is this: don't be deceived. So Jesus says in 24:4, he says, Jesus answered and said to them, take heed that no one deceives you. So don't let yourself be deceived. There's going to be many in the end times who say, this and this is this, and this is this, and this is this. And they're going to say, I'm the Christ, come and follow me. And as the closer we get to the coming of Christ, the more false Christs there are going to be rising up. And so we have to be careful not to allow ourselves to be deceived. Where do we find the truth? Well, we find the truth in the Word of God. Whatever prophet or whoever stands up and claims to speak for God, whatever they say has to line up with what the Word of God tells us. And so we're to take anybody's word that is given and see how it lines up with Scripture. Okay, so don't let yourself be deceived. And that's really important here. The second one is this: don't be troubled. Verse 6, Matthew 24:6. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Now, in verse 7, the next verse, it talks about, well, let me just read it. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. So I think with this coronavirus especially, it's just kind of, it falls into here. But it's not the only thing that we're here. I mean, we've heard of wars all the time, just wars continuing, and wars will continue. And then there's earthquakes and all kinds of trouble. The closer we get to the coming of Christ, the more these things will increase and expand and impact the lives of people. And here's the message: don't be troubled. Don't be troubled. You know, we've seen something, if nothing else, with the pandemic of this virus here, we've seen how people can get stirred up really quickly, can get all anxious and stressed and worried and all this pretty quickly. It didn't take very much to get everybody all riled up and in a tizzy, and we're still in a tizzy. It's like I lived in Florida, so we had this sea grape tree. It had these little, hard little round things, and the wasps, they used to like to come and make their nests underneath the sea grape, hanging from the branches of the sea grape tree. And their nests were, it kind of grew like this, and they all hung on the bottom of the nest. So you could see them, they were out in the open there. So the three of us, me, my brother, and my friend, we thought we were going to give these wasps a little bit of a hard time. So we got our straws, and there were other palm trees, and some of the palm trees had little, little bitty fruit. So we would, take some of those, and we put them in the straw. So we had the bright idea we're going to get under the wasps and shoot up towards them and run. So my friend, he went first, and they're all just sitting there, really quiet, and he shoots, and he hits their nest, and all their wings come out. They're still not moving around, they're hanging upside down on their nest, and their wings are out. And then my brother, he went next. He shot, and he hit the nest, and now Their wings are out and they're walking around. What is going on? They're all agitated. Well, I was third. I was dumb, you know. I got underneath. They're all walking around. Their wings are spread out. And I shot up and I hit it. And I saw several leave the nest. I took off running. One got me in the back and the other got me on the arm. That was no fun. But anyway, the point is, the closer we get to the end, the more agitated things will become. That's right. So, you know, all of these things just contribute to the agitation of life and the culmination of history at the return of Christ. So don't be surprised. I know it's hard and it's troubling and it causes anxiety and stress, but we do not need to fear. God does not want us to act in fear. We do not need to be troubled. We can keep on trusting in Him. He's in control of everything. All right. Thirdly, endure to the end. Matthew 24:13, verse 13 says, "He who endures to the end shall be saved." So this is an exhortation to believers not to give up. Don't just give up and quit. Keep going. Endure to the end. That takes a certain courage and toughness and trust in Christ. So let's have that courage and go and endure to the end. The next one, preach the gospel, 24:14. So we're not just kind of hanging off for dear life, like hanging off the edge of the cliff, although that's how it feels sometimes. But we're here to do the work of the church, to do the work of Christ. And that involves being a witness and giving testimony to Him. So verse 14 says, "And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come." So part of our duty as we head towards the end times is to preach the gospel, to give witness to it, to live it in this world. Because after all, if you don't have Christ and all of these pestilences and wars and all of that stuff is happening, there is no hope. And yes, you better be afraid of dying, and you better experience some anxiety, you know, to protect yourself or whatever. But we have the true hope, and that is found in Jesus. And so let us be a witness of the gospel, so that while all of these things are happening, people will see the light shining from us. We can give testimony to Jesus that He gives hope in life and in death, and then in life to come. And then finally, let's look for the coming of Jesus. Verse 30 says, look for Christ's return. That's our last point. Look for Christ's return here. Verse 30 says, "Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory." So he starts out by the beginning of the chapter by saying, you know, don't let anybody deceive you. Some here is going to say, "I'm the Christ," and "I'm the Christ." Don't let anybody deceive you, because when Christ comes, it's going to be obvious. Everybody's going to see Him. It'll be clear as day, to use our phrase there. There'll be no doubt that Christ has come. All right, so that's our exhortation from the book of Matthew. And again, I went to Matthew because there is a parallel between Matthew and Daniel chapter 11, I believe. All right. Any final comments or questions before we leave?